Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. Today we have a extra special guest here who is local in the Boise market. This is Casey Ames with Taylor Jean Homes. This guy is a legend, guys. He does luxury flips. He does a ton of volume out here in our market. He's known as an authority in our market, so we're pretty stoked that he took the time to spend with us this morning. We're going to just pick his brain. He's probably scaled up faster than anybody I've witnessed scale up, so we'll pick his brain on how he got started, how he was able to scale up, implement those systems and processes, because the guy's kind of a systematic genius. So we'll pick his brain on that, and we're just going to have a ton of value for you guys today. So thanks for dropping by. We hope we add value. If you have any questions, like always, just feel free to reach out. But Casey, thanks for coming this morning, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, both of you.
Yeah,
I love how you put in the intro, add value. I think that's a important piece to helping people not only scale for themselves, but just people take what they take from it, right? Like, we could be talking about scaling, and that's the basis of the conversation, but somebody says something about faith, and they run with that, right? So I love it. So, yeah, so thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure.
I was going to say, too, one of the funniest things that's like the one thing you noticed Jeff talked about is that's something I was thinking about on my drive over here, like as I was thinking about our interactions and our relationship. One of the coolest things about Casey, guys, is in every single deal I've ever done with Casey, he finds time two or three times throughout the deal to call me and say, hey, you know, I don't want this to come off the wrong way or whatever, but I just thought about this and maybe this would be a better way for you to do this. That'd be more efficient. That would help you on your next deal. And I personally, I've never had anybody else in the market that cares to see me do well on future deals, even past whatever we're doing now, and can think bigger picture, like, hey, how can I help this guy get to the next level? I feel like that's how you do almost all your deals. Like, you walked me through a couple big land things that we assigned to you last year, and it was really valuable because I feel like each one I learned something new, and you were patient with me, even though I was on the other end of the deal. And that's pretty rare, and that was really cool.
Yeah, well, like, as the wholesaler, right, there's a lot of pressure on you. Like, flippers always want to harp on the wholesalers for, you know, oh, you should give it to me at X, and you already have this thing locked up and give it to me. And I suppose as a flipper or as a builder, you are buying that, right? You're buying that ease of not having to deal with the motivated seller personally. But one bad buyer or one bad thing can throw a deal off, right?
Yep.
And so often I think there's not enough importance on creating value and just, you know, it helps. It's cyclical, right? So it helps in that moment. It helps you see perspective. But then later, it helps you be more efficient, which means you can then create either more deals or bigger deals or better deals, or you at least know the questions to ask. So yeah, man, I just try to make that part of my deal, whether it's flipping houses, building houses, doing development, apartments, whatever it is. It's always trying to just add as much value as I can.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, so why don't you share with our guys how you got started? What attracted you to real estate? Because I know you were restaurant industry before for a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Management level. What attracted you to real estate and got you started on that?
Yeah, so used to open up P.F. Chang's all over the West Coast. Loved that. That was fun. I was young. So it was a good time to do that. And then I really, nothing like attracted me to it at first. I would say it was a God thing. God put me on that path. I had to go through some stuff in my personal life that took a long time. But made me, it made me harder, and it made me, or maybe not harder is the way to use it. It made me more focused, and it made me, it created a little grit in me. And so really how it happened is I was serving tables and my mom called me. They had just switched from the insurance industry, and they were cold calling in Phoenix. And this was around the time that Brent hadn't even started TTP yet.
Oh, really?
For a lot of people that are on this podcast or whatever, TTP is obviously Wholesaling Inc. and Brett Daniels is a savage. And but he hadn't really created that, but we knew Brent. And so my parents excelled because they were able to implement systems and processes that most people weren't using. And she basically just called me and was like, hey, you'd be really good at this. And I got analysis paralysis, right? Like, I like my little screen pops up and I'm supposed to say all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so it kind of put me off for a little bit. But then once I got focused on it, I realized that I got a couple little deals in Phoenix. And then I realized I could probably be pretty good about it. And so I got a couple bigger deals there. And then I decided, hey, I'm going to open my own wholesale company up in Boise. Well, Boise at that time definitely didn't have any systems or processes here. There was nobody that was really, you know, advanced in that way.
the market wasn't that hot then, was it? I mean,
oh, it was for me.
It was for you.
It was. Yeah, you came in at a good time, but yeah, no, I think that's what made you so successful off the back is like, it's like everybody was just kind of like ebb and flowing, right? Like, hey, I got a deal here or there. And you just came in like, here's my list. Here's my script. Just boom, hit the ground running.
Yeah, and I knew the importance in creating value. I had read Bob Berg's Go Giver book and really had based my philosophy on that, which is he says how you create value is give more than you expect in compensation, right? Yep. And I still live by that motto today. Yep. But there wasn't really any competition. Like, you had Shaw and some other guys that, you know, Sam was doing his thing and everyone, yep. But, you know, they were picking them off as they were picking them off, and some more successful than others, but I was all in. So basically what happened is I was working full time, and the idea was to create space, right? To create time. For those of you who know me, like, time is the most precious metric we should measure.
Yep.
What's measured is managed. And so I was tithing and I was playing around with some fun biblical principles, right? And what I started noticing is that, yes, on a monetary level, my monetary situation was going up, but also God was creating a lot of space and time in my life. And the equivalent to that was me getting to call more, right? And so I got a 20K deal where I still gave it to the buyers at, like, I think it went over asking, right? And this is a wholesale deal. It's not like they always go over asking. It went over asking like 15K from what I was asking. So I was putting an immense amount of value on the project. And really it just took off from there. And I was tenacious. And so once I got that 20K, I went all in.
Yep.
I was all in. So I put my 2 weeks notice in and I said, okay, I'm going to commit to this. As Cortez would say, burn the ships, right? There was no looking back. And so that's how I got started with it. And then it was
nice. Was it. So you started as wholesaling, made the transition to flipping, then started scaling flipping, then fell in love with the luxury flipping. Because this guy, if you see his stuff, he's got a design eye that's just, it's crazy. We always like try and compete with him and we can never just do it. So I literally just this morning was lining out the tile for our new tile guy. And he's like, man, you got a lot of tiles. And I'm like, dude, I'm just trying to keep up, dude. I'm literally just trying to, like,
I need to switch the game up on him.
He's like, you got 8 tiles and 2 bathrooms. I'm like, look, I'm trying, dude. I'm just trying here, okay?
Yeah.
But, and then got into development recently too, right?
Yeah. We've been doing it for a little while now. I got some really nice projects. I think a lot of people want to get into development. What I would urge people to focus on is make sure the deal's right. Mm-hmm. And it's always going to take longer than you think. And there's always going to be, so my mentor, this is a good example. My mentor will say, if I get too hyped up about something, he'll say I'm euphoric.
Yeah.
He'll be like, you're being euphoric. And essentially the idea is that you're emotional and you're excited and stuff. And when we do that, we miss things. Yep. Right. So to look at it from the angle of like, what am I missing? But yeah, so we got a big subdivision that we're doing, 45, big luxury homes. They're all on view lots. And when I say view lots, they're true view lots. And then we build the apartment buildings. So we got a whole bunch of apartment buildings being built right now and stuff. And so I'm kind of just like keeping that cruising right now. I don't need to push any harder. You'll hear me mention my mentor every now and then. And he just says, once you beat the game, play a different game.
Yeah.
And so it's not about money for me. Both of you have spent a lot of time with me and know it's not about money for me. I am focused on money most of the time, because it feeds my family and lets us give to, you know, charities and create value in God's kingdom. So money is the game and we play it well, but it's always about life and just creating value and having fun and enjoying the ride and spreading the word and doing what we can do. So yeah, subdivisions, single family, luxury.
And the subdivision's huge. They're all 2-acre lots.
Yeah, it's 2 to 5 acre lots.
Yeah, those are big.
122 acres.
That's going to be really cool.
122 acres.
Actually, I think, so you and I talked about this a while ago.
You're buying a house out there?
Yeah, no, I wish, dude. We might have to flip a couple hundred more homes to be able to afford a Taylor Jean luxury home.
For real, man. This guy sets his own market caps. It doesn't even make sense, but it always happens.
You really do, because you sold that one down the street from Edson.
Yeah.
For what? Almost $1 million? Was it $1 million?
Your Rose Hill one? It was like 8, 9.
Oh, yeah. I probably lost out on $100,000 on that.
Right, because you did an off-market offer?
Yeah, both of you guys know me, and I'm pretty humble. And I do know when it looks right.
Uh-huh.
But I still have humility. There's guys, you know, you got Solitude and some of those guys out that have been putting houses out in this market for a long time. Tradeswinds puts out a really good product. Yep. Clark. So I don't get overzealous with how good I did. But I will say, if the market would have seen that one, I think that one would have probably went way up.
It was by far, like, that was, I saw that and immediately I was like, I want to move into that one. The Rose Hill one.
I almost bought it.
Yeah. Because you had like the cool brick accents. You had the vaulted ceilings. Yeah,
it was
the layers.
It was done well.
It was beautiful.
It came together nice. But yeah, we got a, it wasn't a million, but we did really well on it. And that was a cash buyer. Just walked up. That's wild. Said, I'm taking it.
We almost tore down. We had just bought a flip in that same neighborhood like a month before that. And we were waiting on permits. And then you listed that. And I was like, ooh, Noah, we might need to tear this thing down, dude. We might just need to tear it down and go Lux.
But at the same time, like, Casey's just this guy that like can go out into a neighborhood and he could just build this beautiful home and he gets to pick his price.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't feel like we could do that.
Taylor G. name, man, you created a brand.
Yeah, you can. And the thing is, it's not just about pretty, right? Like, we build a good home.
Yeah. It's quality.
I pride myself in making sure that we do the things in the home so that they're sound and the buyers are going to be happy for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. And so the other thing about setting your own comps is, I would say that's fair. I see where you're going with it and there's some truth into it. But all I need is an arrow. And if you can show me a house that's a little bigger or a little smaller that did well, I can put out what I believe to be a better product or at least compete if it's a really good job.
Yeah.
And then that sets the bar. And then I work off that. I'll just give out all my secrets. And then I just, you know, take over that neighborhood for a little while and then move on. But well, thank you for the compliments. I mean, we're trying. We're working on the castle right now. Wait till you see this thing.
Dude, I can't wait to see the castle.
That one was sitting for a long time. What, a builder went bankrupt or the homeowners went bankrupt?
It caught on fire. It was a brick oven pizza. Amber flew up the flute.
No way.
Yeah, it caught on fire. Louise. It worked out really well for us because no one wanted to touch a project that big and then it was gnarly.
Yeah, and fire damage. Like, people, one, they're scared of fire damage. And then two, you're talking about the square footage and like
8,500 square feet.
He's not kidding, guys. It is a castle. Like, it is legitimately a castle. It literally
has like that round thing on the front, like a castle.
Yeah, it'll be done in like 3 weeks.
The boys told me you're putting a turret on the front. Is that true? A little turret on the front tower? No. A turret? Is that what they call it? No, a little gun thing?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a moat. We got a moat around it. No, it's going to be spectacular. And I see, that's the thing about me is like, I don't do it for the money. And so these are the types of projects that I enjoy because it's like, I have to work and like figure it all out. Right. Yep. So designing 8,500 square foot, homes are like, it's a task, right? You got to make sure everything's on point and you're in a different buyer's market. And so, you know, they act a little different at 3 million than they do in 1 million and 500 to 1 million and so on and so forth. Right. So you just gotta be conscious. Although I did go bold. So we'll see how that.
Did you?
Oh yeah.
So you went bold with like the design elements.
And yeah. I'll show you some pictures when I'm done. It's bananas.
Nice. I'm excited to see that.
Then really worst case scenario, it doesn't sell. And then I have to talk my family into moving into
it. Yeah, right.
And so then, you know.
It's nice to have the contingency there. You're like, babe, sorry. Didn't work out.
It's 3 acres, babe. It's a horse property. I bought you a horse.
There you go. Chilling. I have one right now. It's like a 5,000 square foot house. And I'm like trying to convince Sarah, hey, just let me remodel this and let's move into it. We have no reason. I got two kids. Yeah. And that's it. Like, we don't need that. No, I'm done, bro. It's dead. But cool. Well, let's backtrack to first year, right? First year flipping. So you were doing wholesales. What made you want to jump from wholesales to flipping? Because I feel like a lot of our listeners, our goal here is kind of, this is going to be folks who are listening to this, they probably, you know, they've done a couple of deals, a couple of wholesales. Now they're going, okay, how can I make this repeatable, right? Because we noticed early on in our business, like a lot of our success, like it wasn't repeatable or scalable. So what kind of value can we add to folks? What were the steps that you took that really made this, changed it from like, oh, I had a couple successful deals to now I'm creating a successful business that is repeatable and there's some processes here that I can hammer down.
Yeah, so for me, it was revenue streams, right? And I was trying to create more revenue streams. I had gotten the wholesale company where it was just a well-oiled machine and it was producing a lot. We were able to create a lot of value for the community in the sense of like, you know, it wasn't just we were hoarding all the money. There was a lot of charitable acts going on, which really fueled me to do better. And I was like, okay, if I can do this, then I can duplicate this. Also, the other thing about businesses, and I say this I say this, but pay attention to what you're doing, because you can kill both businesses or multiple businesses by doing this too fast. But once you learn how to build a business, then it doesn't really matter what the other business is. It's replicable or whatever. And so you can build now another business. And I think I knew that because I had set up, I say I, but obviously you guys know I have people in the background that are the smarter ones, and I just kind of sit out here and do my thing. But like, I realized that I had that thing dialed in, and it was systems and processes. And if I could directly reflect that in a flipping stream, then I could do some serious damage, right? And like, you remember when we worked together way back in the beginning, I was always like, it's the systems and the process. You have to follow this system, and you have to do this.
Didn't even know what a system and process was. Yeah. And you're like, system and process. I was like, what the heck is he talking about?
Yeah. And so it was never about flipping homes to this day. When I'm talking to my management, you know, whether I'm talking to, you know, my COO or one of my project managers or whatever the deal is, whenever there is an issue, we can always go back a step or two, and there will almost always be a process or a system missed, right? So, and it's clockwork. I promise you, there's like very few circumstances, and you can go down to like trades. There was a leak. Well, did you check out the plumber when he did his final walkthrough? You know, did you check out electrical to make sure that you're all your rough-in is in the right spot?
Yep.
And if you're not signing them out when they're leaving, or you're not getting a bid and you're both on the same page, then schedules are shifted and so on and so forth. So I realized very quickly that I could duplicate that in the flipping thing. If I could just figure out how to work those systems out real time, right? Yeah. And it took about a year, I think. There was a learning curve, a lot of mistakes made. I did have the advantage, I think, of owning that wholesale company. I got some of my properties really deep. And so I was able to make errors and still do okay. Whereas some people buy too high, right? Yep. And they don't do that. And that's why whenever you see these, like most of our stuff's new construction right now, but when you see a lot of these flips, just understand that I bought those the right way.
Yeah. Yep.
This all goes back to the purchase.
Yeah,
right?
You got
to
buy right.
Yeah. And, you know, so anyway. So we jammed that out, and what I would encourage people to do is study, and don't confuse like preparation with not taking action. You need to get in there, because the best way to get in there and fail is to fail, and then you learn from it, right? I think we both learned from our relationship, and probably the biggest thing that we took out of it is that we were both on a path to go really high, and neither of us were going to help each other get there. It was, you know, there needed to be separation, and we've remained friends since, right? Yep. It just is, you learn how and what you need. And so to take care of the education piece, like when you're getting inspections, walk through with the inspector. Don't just set your inspection at 9.
Yeah.
Walk through with him. I want to know why you're calling these things out. I want to know what the reasoning is. He'll start talking about joists, and if you got this, and you got to make sure, you know what I mean? And then you start to wrap your head around framing a little bit and trusses and so on and so forth. And so that kind of just excelled us. I always had inventory.
Yep.
And still to this day, we always have inventory. And so that was never an issue. I think that helped, right? So when you asked me before this, you asked me numbers. Well, a lot of people are struggling to get inventory.
Yeah.
I've never had an issue with that. And so it's like, I can just run, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And we're smart, and we watch the markets really close, but I'm also semi-fearless, because I feel like I got a good, not to say that I couldn't get sideswiped or something like that, but like COVID is a good example. When COVID happened, everyone backed off, and I put the pedal down.
Yeah.
But I bought smart. I bought in the 350 to 550 market, knowing that we were going to have about 3 months to turn that whole cycle, and that we were probably going to come out of this okay.
Yeah.
It got sketchy there for a while, but we were just going. And then I'm talking to people that are going broke and stuff, and we were having some of the best months because there was no new inventory.
Yep.
So we sandwiched it.
That's where our business really took off, was COVID, man. Like we were in this growth stage, and we're like, we're putting pedal to the metal. Like there's no way we're slowing down. We had some lenders like back out on us like day of closing, and we're like, dude, get a 3-day extension, we'll figure it out.
And we did.
Yeah.
I leveraged my personal home.
Yeah, we were like, dude, let's double down, not, let's run.
Not to be done anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Not, not great advice, but the pandemic was different, okay?
Yeah, we were scratching.
But yeah, no, I think what you said, what I want to hit on there is when you're talking about like, hey, go walk through with this inspector, realize what they're calling out. I think a lot of the misconception, and this was my misconception starting out, is when you're talking about scaling and doing volume, that you think it has to, like, you got to do it quickly and you got to do, hey, we're going to do 40 flips this year. That means like you can't be at the job site this long. You got to focus on this stuff outside of the job site, yada, yada. When you really hammer down on those points, you got to learn those points to be able to scale those points, right? And so I think that's one of the things people miss is they try and make this big jump and like, I'm going to do 40, but then they don't actually learn those systems and processes. So talking about preparation, like that's huge. Like set yourself up right. Be willing on the first couple, like, hey, we'll slow down on the first couple. Or hey, maybe like right now we have a list of tasks that we're not allowing ourselves to do anymore. But that's because we've gotten to this point, right? Like a year or 2 years ago, those tasks were not the same. Like I would go to the job site. I would tell the guys where to put the cabinets. I would do this stuff because it was important, because I can't create a system and a process if I don't have a knowledge of it, right?
Yeah, you can only scale to what your bandwidth is.
Yeah.
And people always ask me all the time about like the success piece of it. And I'm always like, well, here's an example. I'm getting the floors done. So I flew up one of my buddies from Tampa to do our floors in the castle. He's a monster. Nice. And he just puts out a really cool product. Yeah. And so we flew him up and he's like, well, my goal is in like 2 years to be where you're at. And I just looked at my wife, Becca, and she looked at me and we both started laughing. Like, I don't know if you want that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, I'm focused and driven. And so if you're going to be that person, you have to be the most educated person.
It
doesn't mean you have to be the smartest person in the room. It just means you better know your stuff. Yep. Like if your leads aren't catching stuff and then your project managers aren't catching stuff and your COO isn't catching stuff, you have to catch those things, right? Yep. They're monumental. The other thing I would say on that is my advice is to don't get caught up in the hype of scaling. Mm-hmm. You kind of alluded to this in what you were saying, but like you can do 5 deals a year for a $100,000 return.
Yeah.
And you make $500,000, or you could do 50 for 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like so don't get caught up in the hype. I think that's one mistake we made is last year or the year before, we were trying to go so fast that I call them leaky buckets. We just had leaky buckets everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I had quarters that I probably would have made significantly more if I would have been doing it now.
Yeah.
Cause now we're at a good pace. Yeah. And so somebody asked me the other day, he's like, well, how many are you doing at a time? And I'm like, well, I do about 5 or 7 at a time. And then I always have my new builds going because new builds are essentially not really like labor intensive until the end. Right. And I like that number 5 to 7.
Yeah.
Now new builds, we could do 100, right? Like it doesn't matter to me. It's all talk about systems and processes. Yeah. That's a scalable model.
Yep.
But flips are a different monster. And so I would just say, don't get caught up in the hype of scaling, be hyper-focused and sniper out some really nice deals and you'll find yourself with more time and more money.
Yeah.
You know? Kind of summarize that. It's like more is not better, right? Like just more projects, more things to worry about, more things to watch isn't better, but better is better. So find better deals, deeper deals.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. That's exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah, and I think scale, like the other thing is scaling looks different for everybody, right? So like we're in like these masterminds and a lot of the folks that are in these masterminds are Midwest guys. Like scaling for them is 200 to 300 flips a year. Lord Jesus, please never let me do 200 to 300 flips a year. I would never want to do that. Like and when we look at it, it's funny. Like we have these mentors because they're great at systems and processes, but they do about 200 to 250 flips a year. And their total revenue is maybe like $400,000 more than ours. And we're doing 30. I'm like, bro, I would stick at 30 all year long.
Their flips also too are like.
Yeah, they're doing quick cosmetic ones.
Like Home Depot carpet.
Just the houses are cheaper over there. Well, yeah, I go to big masterminds too. You know me, I seek counsel from a lot of people. And I would say I do well in a lot of the categories with some of the bigger names that you would even know.
Yeah.
Some of those guys are my buddies and we do just fine on our profit and losses, right? Our P&Ls look good.
Yeah.
But we sniper focus, you know, like you and I were talking the other day and you're talking about new construction.
Yeah.
And I was like, just whatever you do, get the good ones.
Yeah.
Because the good ones will give you that oomph. So like most people look at the castle, for example, and they're like, what? Like I would never do that. Well, if yeah, you would if you knew what it would turn out like. And yeah. I didn't, I knew what it would turn out like in my head. And it's not there yet, but I think it's going to come together real nice. And that's going to be a good, that's going to be a good deal for us.
Yeah.
Right. Because of the fire and everything, we had to do new trusses and down to the studs. And, and so we spent a lot of money putting it together, but we got it at a really good deal. So
With all your moving parts and all these things that you have to oversee and look, how do you touch base with your people? Like, I imagine that's pretty systematized. Like,
oh, I don't really do much of it anymore. And I mean, I say that, but mine looks like more me meeting with, like, you guys know Zeb, yeah. Zeb runs my companies and he's phenomenal. And so my deal is more like, I'm involved with a lot of acquisition stuff, a lot of the money stuff, and then also training and teaching because you can only get so good in a couple of years. And Zeb's only been with us for about a year and a half now. Yeah. So like I have to teach him consistently ways to look at things, things to look for. And I think how you get to that level is you realize how much money you're losing by not doing it the correct way. Right. And so you care more because it's your deal and you can never get anyone to care as much as you. Yeah. I think before you guys got in a partnership, I warned you of that. And, I was just like, when you get into a partnership, just understand. And I think you got a gem with him, 'cause he actually is in the same stage of his life where he cares now, right? Where 100%. It's like, he's got kids, you know, we're doing this for a reason. But you got to be really careful because most people aren't going to care as much as you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so like you go into the projects and you're like, why is the trim look like this? And how did you guys not see this? And they're just like, whatever. 'Cause they make $20 an hour.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Where you're like, dude, we can't do this.
My brand. This is my name.
This is not acceptable. And so you have to be you to do that. Right. And so it takes time to hire really good people. But you know, I have a phenomenal team and I couldn't do any of this without them. And Zeb is a massive piece of that. He's an integral piece of that.
There you go.
He's an integral piece of that because he cares, right? He gets paid very handsomely, but he cares. And so it's rare that you're going to find somebody like that. I got people all over the country that call me and they're like, dude, how do you get a COO like that? And I'm like, pray.
Yeah. Pray. But then I also think too, like,
but it's very true. I don't mean to cut you off, but like, I tell Jeff all this all the time. Like before I came here, I would pray daily that I could find a business partner that we could go grow stuff together. We could do some because I like with Jeff, I always say like him and I together is not a multiple of two, like a multiple of seven.
Yeah.
Because he'll catch stuff that I don't catch. He'll follow up with me.
Oh, it's very much like that when you got two powerful people working. And that's the thing about Zeb and I, if we ever get overloaded with stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like sometimes, so like right now I have like five new constructions going and we're building all the apartments and we had just acquisitioned a couple luxury flips in the historic district. And so you guys both know how that goes.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of like labor intensive tasks.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you want? And I'll take the rest. And so he took his part, you know, and I took the rest. And we just work. And now all the tasks are done.
Yeah.
I like what you just said there, though. And that, I think that speaks to the type of leader you are and why your team follows you so relentlessly into any type of project you give them. Is you just said, hey, Zeb, what is it that you want to do? And I'll take the rest. Whereas the traditional leader would say, yeah,
take what I don't
want. I'm doing these things. You're doing everything else.
Yeah. And I'm learning how to be a better CEO, right? So you ask me like, what do I do? Well, it's a joke because my team doesn't think I do anything.
Bro, literally, as soon as you scale up, they're like, do you even work? You're like, dude, shut up. I've got all of this for you to work on.
You have no idea and would have probably folded under the pressure a long time ago.
Yep.
I do a crazy amount of stuff, but it's also it's been a practice and an exercise to be able to multitask the way that I do.
Yeah.
So people will ride with me every now and then, and some people will come up to follow me for a week or whatever the case is. And like, I just am like, hot route.
Yeah.
Spin, boom, 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 boom. You know, I got like 10 different things going on at once, but then they're all done. Mm-hmm. And then I can go work out or I can, you know, take my family out on the lake or whatever we want to do. And so that's the goal for me, is to spend as much time as I can with my family. And if I if I hold that to be true and that's what I really want, then I need to get it done and make sure it happens for them. And that might mean I need to work 16-hour days for a year.
Yeah.
So we worked 16-hour days for a year, probably even more hours, actually.
Yeah.
There was a long time where I was just like...
Yeah, Casey would call me at 10 at night. I'm like, bro, I'm sleeping. What's up? He was ready to go.
Yeah.
But I think one of the reasons, like, so when you say, like, hey, I got Zeb, he's this high-level COO, I think it's because you've always, at least from what I've seen, like, when I was on board with you, like, you always were clear about what the vision was. It was there was never any uncertainty, right? It was like, hey, this is the goal of the company. This is what we have to do to get there. And it was very clear. And we've been, just as we study what it means to be CEOs and higher level players, we realize like creating culture and sharing vision is huge. If your team doesn't know the vision, then they're not motivated, right? Like getting somebody to take ownership of something is extremely difficult, especially when they don't know the vision. If you share that vision and you show them how they fit into that vision, and then you pay them well also. Mm. But
did you read Traction? Are you reading it right now?
Nah, dude, I just know this stuff. I'm just a high-level thinker, bro. I just read that last night. Bro. It's so funny. Noah reads all these books, and he's like, bro, check out this idea. I'm like, bro, I've been known that. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. I've been known that.
Yeah, you know, and Noah brings up a point. There's nothing that my team that I ask of them that I wouldn't do myself.
Yeah.
I just no longer want to do it myself, and it's not scalable. So, for example, we're doing the luxury homes, and they're great. But there's apartments to be built.
Yeah.
Because they're really great.
Mm-hmm.
And how can I streamline that so that I'm not dealing with that all the time? And so now I kind of got that wired into where it doesn't take much of my time and we're putting up a lot of doors. But you have to be willing to teach them. And I like Ray Dalio's philosophy on thoughtful disagreement. Like you got to be able to sit next to somebody and say like, hey, I think there's a better way to do this. What if we brought the project manager over and then we hired an office project manager to watch over both them so that they're not bombarded with all these little daily tasks of,
that's good.
You know, making sure we're watching the schedules and stuff like that. And then Zeb says, I'm like, not really seeing the value in that. I just am not real sure on what they would do. And I'm like, what do you mean you wouldn't see the value in it? If you have somebody monitoring all the little tasks, then your guys that are monitoring the big tasks have more time. And he's like, okay, all right. And then the conversation starts, right?
Yeah.
And then we can start to spark up. And then I also trust Zeb too. So if he says no, so that's the other thing is like, if you're going to hire a COO, they have to be able to run the company.
Yeah.
You can't go in and play visionary and integrator at the same time. You have to give them the space to fail, to learn. And then when they ask help of you or they ask questions or direction or they need help, you need to go in and assist, right? Mm-hmm. But you got to let them do their own thing for a while anyway. Yep. And so that's what we do is like, you know, we have weekly meetings where we meet up and we go over everything as a whole. I ask him how he's doing. I ask him mentally, spiritually, physically, like, how are you doing? Everything's good. Is there anything that you need help with? What are your biggest problems right now? You know? And then once again, it goes back to the systems.
Yeah.
Because typically one of Zeb's biggest problems will be somebody else in the company not doing what they were supposed to do. Because the system works and I didn't create this. Like I got this from my mentors, right?
Yeah.
And I was clear on that like way back in the day.
Yeah.
Like these dudes that used to do 100 at a time are my mentors and now they don't want to do it anymore. And I don't want to do that many anymore, but that's where we learn those. And so it's almost always something. Somebody didn't check something off. Somebody didn't take a picture of the inventory. And now the electrician doesn't know where the lights are or whatever the case is, right? And then Zeb gets a call and has to deal with it. Well, it takes time. And then he calls me, hey, do you know where that is? And I take care of it. And then, you know, I'm like, okay, this is kind of what I was getting at. I'm like, go back.
Yeah.
So when what's-his-face went and picked up the material, he's supposed to take a picture. He's supposed to attach that picture to the CRM so that you have a visual inventory there. Did that picture get taken? Oh, well, no, they were in a hurry. Well, there you go. There's your problem.
Yeah.
Hold your leads accountable.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So it's just like sniffing stuff out like that where you just got to train them. For a good COO, you got to give them the space to run the company. You can't go in and run it with them.
I think that's smart, good. Though, to take a breather and to go back, because I think it's really easy, especially in like our world where everything's very fast paced. Like you'll be in the middle of one project, you're underwriting three more, you got to make a decision to have earnest money in on this one. And then you're in dispositions on two of them. So it's like, it's very easy to just like, whatever, we figured it out, the problem, let's move on to the next 10 things because we've got bigger and better things to do.
Yeah.
But that, taking that moment to go back and say, okay, what happened? Why did Casey just have to spend 45 minutes on a call to try to unravel a problem on a flip that shouldn't have been there?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you got to be honest with yourself who the problem is. Mm-hmm. So you guys know one of my project managers, right? And one of my project managers is not only a very dear friend of mine, which I don't necessarily recommend hiring your friends to run your company, although mine situation has worked out really well. And they've kind of bought in, as Jeff was saying, they bought into the greater picture. Yeah. They see light at the end of the tunnel with it. And I'll do my job to make sure that happens, right? And I already have for a lot of them. But we had a time where we were doing about 20 at a time. And I looked at it and it was 22 when I had this like epiphany. And I had fired him from his position and brought him down. And he was the project manager and I had brought him down. Well, everyone's always going to take shots at the throne, right? Like, heavy is the head that wears the crown, though.
Yeah.
And they realize that once they get in that seat. But everyone wants to be like, oh, I could do his job better.
Yeah.
And I called it out. I pulled them all together and I said, look, everybody's been harping on this guy because he's not hitting everything. And I'm telling you right now, you have no clue how much this dude does. Yeah. And a light went off in my head. And I finished my stuff, right? Sure enough, somebody hopped in that lead and didn't do a good job. And then he had to take over. He needed that space to have some time on reflection and look at the picture as a whole. But what I found was the mistake was mine. And I apologized to him for removing him from that situation, as his monetary situation didn't change. It didn't really hurt anything other than his feelings, right? But I apologized because I took a look at the bigger picture and I was putting way too much on his plate. It was physically impossible for this guy to manage all that task, then to monitor it the way that I was expecting, right? Which, like, I expect, like, excellence and nothing less. And that's just how it's got to be. And so I'm just all over everything. And, you know, and there's just no way he can live up to it, right? Yeah. That was my mistake. That was my error. So you got to, like, train him, but then you got to watch him, and then you got to make sure that they're good.
Yeah.
It's a comfortable pace. And then I'm like, is it his fault or is it my fault that this isn't getting done?
Yeah.
You know, and you can, if the finger keeps pointing, what do they say? It's one forward, three, or pointing right back at you. You know? Yeah.
Well, let's go granular on one particular deal real quick, and let's go through, like, from finding it to the financing it to turning it and selling it. And I think, like, that's where, like, especially people that are trying to grow, to hear how you go through a deal from start to finish will really help. So you,
Casey's like, bro, you need Zeb for that. Let's call those are Zeb's numbers.
Yeah. Well, let's go through the North End Historic District House, because that wasn't very long ago. And I think we broke the price per square footage record on that in the North End.
Yep.
So how'd you find it?
And it got wild. So I, how did I find that one? An agent brought it to me.
Okay.
It had just been listed, and they weren't showing the inside of it. They weren't showing it to anyone. Mm. But the price that it was at, I knew that worst case scenario, I could bulldoze it and build a new house, right? Mm. Which is hard to do in the historic district, but Zeb's really good with them, and they're really good to him because we just do what we say we're going to do, right? Yeah, and,
follow through.
Yeah, we follow through, and they know that. And so anyway, so we got in. And then we ended up putting Ernest down. We bought it, and we ended up, they pushed out the closing. Okay. Well, because they pushed out the closing, I saw some leverage there. And I was like, okay, well, just understand that I have this money tied up. Like, can I at least get in there and get a plan going, right? And so we got in there. And real quick, I realized that the ceiling heights wasn't going to cut it for what I wanted to do. And I was more interested in doing a really cool piece in the North End than I was in the financial, like, return, although I knew it was going to be decent. But so that's when we blew the top out, right? Yeah. So I blew the roof off. Now, just for the record, I'm not telling everybody to just go blowing the roof off of houses. Yeah. But I just knew what we could accomplish if we did that. And there wasn't a lot of vaulted ceilings in that area. And so we did that. COVID hits. Okay. P&Z shuts down. You can't get your permits.
Uh-oh.
You can't. I got trusses coming. I got stuff flying. I can't do any of it. Then winter hits, right?
Yep.
And now we're sitting on a pretty spendy acquisition in the North End. But God's great, and it worked out. The timing couldn't have been more perfect. And so P&Z starts coming back up, and we're starting to get all of our permits flying again, and then the weather starts breaking, and we just went full metal jacket on it, and we ended up, I don't know if I want to share the numbers, but it turned out really, it turned out about as good as it possibly could have.
Yeah,
you know
what it sell for on the back end?
$1,050,000
$1,050,000 Jeez Louise.
And that was the second highest offer. There was a higher offer that I didn't accept.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What was the total rehab?
I think like two. I could probably find out. I don't know where my phone is. I think it was like $200,000 Yeah. It was like 100.
That's crazy.
It was like 178, but it was only 2,200 square feet, and it was a $200,000
Yeah. Spent a lot of money. Yeah. What's crazy is people like. One of my big pet peeves right now is that people are like, oh, I can't find deals. One, spend money on marketing and you'll find deals. Two, we've had some very profitable flips that we bought off the MLS. Like, you just bought that one off the MLS. Like, there's still deals on the MLS that, one, if you're willing to do a drastic rehab, do something big, you can create the equity, right? Mm-hmm. Or like in our case, like, we just offered way lower. And for some reason, they said yes. No clue why they said yes. But there's still deals out there to be had. 100%. Like, one, spend money on marketing. Two, like, don't trick yourself into thinking that the list price is what you have to offer. Like, it's so basic, but like, people are like, oh, you're in a hot market, you can't offer less than the list price. You might not get it, but dude, throw out some offers. You never know. Like, you still, like, we got the one we got, we do little 2-1s. We're not the North End flipper, you know, but we did little 2-1s. This is a Caldwell house, man. We picked it up for like, they had it listed for 210. Nobody was looking at 210 because it made absolutely no sense. We picked it up at like 180. It was offered 180. They said yes, drop 30K, like, third day on the market, because they're like, oh, we haven't gotten any calls at 210. We went and did a little 15K flip in 2 weeks, sold it for like 265, made like $70,000 on a 2-1 that we were in for 3 weeks. And it was on the market. Like, there are deals out there if you're willing to get told no. Like, you got to be willing to get told no.
We got it for 150
too. Oh, we got it for 150?
Yeah,
we got it for 150. As I was saying those numbers, I was like, that doesn't add up to 70K. I'm going to have to relook it.
Yeah, we got it for 150.
Well, like, you know me, I'm blunt. I think I told Noah this like a while back. He asked a question about deal flow or something, and I'm like, well, how many offers are you putting out? And he's like, well, we put a decent amount of offers. I was like, I guarantee I put way more offers out than you.
Yeah.
Yep.
On a weekly basis, I guarantee I write way more offers than you. Well, I get more deals accepted.
Yeah. The more offers you write, the more deals you get.
That's what I was going to say. Is like, yeah, we got Newport accepted off the MLS, but at the same time, we've probably written, like, I would say, like 50, 60 offers in the last 60 days.
Yeah, easily. Yeah, we try and get 5 to 10 out a week.
And it's an inventory thing with people are just selling their houses for more money. Sure, that's fine. Well, it's inflation. It's not that they're selling their houses for more money. Everything's costing more money.
Yeah.
And there's more money being printed. And so it's inflation, and you're seeing it all over the country. So prices will continue to go up, and money at this time will be less valuable. And so they'll have to, it'll cost more money to get things, right?
Yep.
So that one in the North End, how'd you finance it?
Private money,
all private money. So no hard money. Yeah. Cool. I just figured that's like valuable for people to know, like, okay, here's this guy that scaled his business. What did he do?
Yeah.
That's like a whole back end.
It's actually a really important piece. And you guys know me, so I don't really like to talk about my finances too much. But the thing is like another thing that has allowed me to do what I do is A, credibility and trust, right? Because I have a few of these guys that will trust me with millions of dollars without even blinking an eye. Yep. And it's because I always return their money. I always do what I say I'm going to do. I'm always very, very transparent. So they don't even ask me anymore for like pictures. They don't ask for anything, right? They just say, okay, cool, get it done. But I almost always send them pictures of like, not necessarily like the in construction, but like I'll send them pictures of like the listing at the end.
Yeah.
And I'll give them timelines. Hey, Or I'll even do a recap and I'll be like, hey, so-and-so, we got this, 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 and this together. This is where this is at. This is where this is at. This is where this is at. And this is where this is at, right? There's some transparency. And there's enough money going around that every now and then one of them will fly up or something like that. And they'll, you know, just want to see the inventory. Yeah. But they always see what I said. It's not like they fly up here and you got like all these things that's not like, where's all this money going?
Yeah.
So we're just good with our money like that. But the trick to getting money is, once again, the same as the deals, is how many people are you talking to get money?
Yeah.
So I have, you know, I have some students, and the same thing with them always. I'm like, are you going out and seeking more money? Like, you're starting to scale up. You're going to get yourself in a little bit of a pickle here pretty soon where you got five going on and they're all 100 plus rehabs or whatever the case is. Or the other thing, so one of my students, Ryan, you guys know Ryan, he's a slayer. He you can't keep up with him. Yep. He's just a beast. And I told him months ago, I was like, bro, you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to get into some trouble if you don't find some money, because you're going to miss out on opportunities.
Yeah.
Because God's starting to, because he was talking about getting into multifamily, and I'm like, well, have you prayed about it?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, pray harder. and make it happen. You know what I mean? Like, if that's your path, it'll happen.
Yeah.
And then, like, lo and behold, like, a couple days later, he gets this multifamily deal. But he didn't have money.
Yeah.
So then he calls me, and he's like, hey, you want to go in on this deal? And I'm like, well, I don't really like partners. But, like, sure, let's spin dry it and see what happens, right? And then now the tables have turned because I got on him for not being ready, right? I'm like, you can't ask God for something that you haven't put work in yourself. You know, like, dig your own holes, right? Yep. Now the tables have turned. So I just sold him a multifamily property. And so now he's going to be doing a project and I get to guide him through that whole thing. But like he dealt with the money. He got his own
deal. Nice.
Like fool me once, shame on me type thing. Right? Yeah. So you want to make sure that you're set up for success. Everybody wants to scale and everybody wants to make bigger profits and all that. But like, are you thinking a few stages ahead? Cause what happens when you're searching at the $500,000 price point and you want to use the MLS as an example, something pops up for $900,000 on the MLS that has a $400K to $500K spread on it.
Yeah.
And you're not looking in that market because you don't have the ability to go close that thing.
Yeah.
So now you're going to go do 20 flips this year to try to get what you'd make off of one. Now you see why I'm playing in that market is because it's not so much that the spreads are so much better, which they are, but it's also, there's just not a lot of competition in the acquisition of those deals because a lot of people can't lock up $1 million deals. You know?
Everybody flips in the under 350.
Yeah, well, I mean now
everybody's at.
Yeah, so now under five.
Now under five, But yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of competition at that. We actually had somebody send us a lead yesterday, but it's just not our space. But they sent us a home in Eagle that was like, they wanted like $800,000 for it and the home next door sold for $1 million. You know what I mean? So it's like,
see, but I hear those numbers instantly and I'm like, that's not a good deal.
No.
Yeah. Cause you
got to drop $100 at least you're gonna have in that house.
100 of financing.
Money. Yeah.
Decent amount of commission and all that. There's no spread in it.
Yeah.
But then that's the type of deal that I would look at and say, okay, is 1.2 possible?
Yeah.
Is 1.3 possible?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, cause most of the time in those areas, comps are weird and it's like, you have to be really particular with what you have. If your comp is worth 1.2, and it has a view, you better have a view for 1.2.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
100%.
That's
true. So it's good. I think on the money piece, man, I think people look at money differently than they look at deal flow, which I think is a big error, right? Like money is also scalable and repeatable. Like the people we borrow money from, we started like, okay, hey, we got a small little flip, gives 50K. Now we got 100K because we did a good job. We followed through. We did what we said we were going to do. Now we got 100K. Now we got one of them scaled up to like 600. So money is also repeatable if, one, you have your follow through. Two, money runs in circles, right? Like I'm a firm believer, like people who have money hang out with people who have money. So when you do something right, they're happy with the return, right? Like people who have money talk about where they're investing in their investing circle. So, hey, I got this guy down in Boise who he gave me my money back twice as fast as he said, right? Always, what is it? Under promise, over deliver, right? Mm-hmm. So, hey, there's going to be a 6-month flip. Oh, hey, you got your money back in 2 months and I'm still paying you a 3-month return because that's what I told you is a minimum. So we've been really successful doing that and then getting people to double down with their money, but then also like getting random calls like, hey, here's my cousin who also has money, or here's my business partner who also has money. Yeah. Yeah, so money is repeatable if you do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah, it's kinetic. And, you know, the cool thing is with that is like anything in business, you evolve into the next category of leadership or mentorship or whatever. And if you're constantly advancing, those circles just change. Like the financial situation for me and the numbers that go through my head on a daily basis. If you would have told me those numbers 5 years ago, I would have been like, well, here's the thing. You knew me 5 years ago. And I was like, that's where I'm going to be.
Yep.
So I made it happen. But now I just like, the commas just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's not for me. Once again, it's not about the money. It's about to like give value to God's kingdom.
Yep.
But the conversations are different. The people that I hang out with are different.
Yeah.
The everything's different, right? Like I mean, I agree. It's kinetic and you need to talk to more people to get that message out and then they will recognize that. You're not paying 6-month minimums, are you?
No, not 6 months. We do a 3-month minimum just because if I'm going to ask somebody to give me their money, I'm not going to borrow your money. 3 months
is good.
Yeah.
I was like 6 months?
No, not 6 months. That'll add up real quick. But we do the 3 months because we get we've been doing a lot of wholesales. So we just get it, put it on the market. But if I'm going to ask you for $100,000 to close this deal and you got to pull it out of your IRA or your HELOC or wherever you're loaning me money, I want to make it worthwhile for you.
And that's not, I'm critical just because we're friends. And so I'm just like trying to guide a little bit when I say don't pay the 6-month minimum.
Yeah.
But like hypothetically, what if the deal was, hey, I'll pay for all the acquisition and I'll pay for all the construction. And here's the numbers and you run the math, but I want a 6 month minimum on that. And you run the math and it turns out to be a grand slam for you and you don't have to come out of your pocket at all. Then yeah, sure. Pay the 6 month minimum. Mm-hmm.
Like that's what's cool about real estate is like, yeah, there's certain parameters you want to stay within, but also the deal dictates it. Like if the deal can afford it, do it. And like, we're in a similar, like I love to give to people. Like I literally, Noah's like, bro, what are you doing with your money? I'm like, I'm just giving it to people, bro. Like I make money to give to people. Like there's literally like, I don't need a massive house. I just want a modest house. I want a decent lifestyle. I want time. I want to bless the socks off of people, right?
Yep.
That is what I want to do. And I'm kind of forgetting my point here, but we're...
Kinetic energy, money, I don't know. Conversations are different.
Well, we were talking about right now. Man, that's the embarrassing. Minimum. Just forgot it.
Well, anyways. So, you got all hyped up.
Right? I talk about giving to people, I just get jacked, bro.
You rolled up to a job site yesterday that I was checking out.
Yeah.
And he rolled up with one of his buddy's kids who he just went and bought a longboard for. At the skateboard shop.
Picked out a pink longboard. It was super weird.
But that's whatever. But that's pretty cool. Like, how many people do you know that just, like, buy their friend's kid's skateboards?
Yeah, like, and I bought your kid shoes, he bought, right?
Bro, the dopest Vans ever. Yeah. So he just outgrew them. I was pretty bummed.
Yeah, and so that's the thing is, like, you know, this is God's kingdom. The quicker we realize that it's not our money in the first place and we can just be good stewards of his money, hopefully you gain some trust with him and then he trusts you with more. And that's just kind of how it goes. Mm-hmm. If you're doing your part, you know, you'll just see more of it. It is what it is. But
did we ever tell you the name of the show? We haven't settled on the final verbiage of it, but it's either going to be Chasing Freedom or Chasing Time. Cause that's the whole goal. That's like why we do what we do too, which is we're going after freedom. We want more time.
So yeah. Personally, I would have a hard time with the Chasing Time one. Because we're already blessed with time. It's just if we're using it correctly.
Correct. Yeah.
Chasing freedom, well, you can argue that you have to go to war to get your freedom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
actually, those words exactly. We've had to war to get freedom, right?
Yep.
And so you can chase the freedom, right? Because you might say, well, like for me, it was 5 years, X number, dollar, and then that dollar obviously changed.
Yeah,
and things,
you just keep going, chasing a false summit.
Yeah, things have happened and whatnot, but... we've blown past a lot of those, and so the new goals are set. But you got to be clear that there's a road to travel, right? And you're going to have to work really hard on that road, but give yourself a timeline that you can meet, and then you don't have to work as hard, right? Yep. Like, going back to the conversations will change thing. It used to be grind hard, and, like, that's what we do. We just grind hard. We grind hard. And then my conversation started saying, and it's like, no, I want to be more efficient, and I want to work smarter. I don't want to be grinding. You know, I'm not trying to wake up and grind all day. No. That's just not what I'm trying to do.
We want to wake up and choose our day and be with our family as much as we can. And
I want to go boating or something.
So, Casey, can you recommend, you know, one or two books that maybe changed the trajectory of your business over the years?
The Bible.
I love that.
A Leaky Bucket is good by, I'm forgetting his name. A Leaky Bucket is really good. It'll really teach you, like... If you want to scale, then read A Leaky Bucket first, because then when you scale, you'll start seeing all this money flying around and you're like, what? That was really good. I'm trying to think like what, I mean, The Four Spiritual Laws of Prosperity is a good one. Ray Dalio's Principles is a good one. I really like that one. Actually, that one helped me a lot. But here's the thing is like, all the answers are in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, like, if in my life, if my spiritual life is good and my spiritual principles are good, my business is a direct reflection of that.
Yeah.
And so you will find the same spiritual principles in the Bible that you're doing in your personal life, then taking them to business. And how are you treating your brothers in business? Are you making sure there's bread for everyone? Are you, you know what I mean? Like, just all those same principles are in there. Be honest, you know. And Jesus was no slouch, so, like, he'd remind people real quick sometimes if they were not walking the path, you know? And so I have to be that sometimes, you know? So
I feel like every business book or every self-help book is, it's a spinoff of some story or some concept from the Bible.
Yeah, it's
at
all,
some point, it all boils back down to the Bible.
Yep.
Yeah, and I don't want to discourage, if, like, people aren't Christian or don't read the Bible, then read it from a... Just read it from a study standpoint. I think that's one thing with reading, because I probably read, as you sound like you read a lot. I read a ton. And I don't read every book that I read to agree with it.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
You know, I would argue that if you read the Bible and you like dive into it, something weird's going to happen and you're going to end up being like, oh, dang, what, I was missing all this. But I read a lot of books that I don't necessarily, like I was reading Scaling Up a little while back and I don't want to scale.
Yeah.
I've already scaled and I've scaled down. Yep. Like I don't want to do 100 houses. You know what I mean? I want to hyper sniper focus on things. And so it's okay to read books and not necessarily agree with what they're talking about. You know, so
right, 100%.
I recommend doing that. It's a great best way to study is to read both sides.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally, man. Well, dude, we appreciate you being on the show so much, man. You dropped a ton of value. It's just fun to sit down with you and just talk about
shop. Yeah, it's been nice, huh?
Business. Yeah.
Do it again soon.
Got me inspired to get more tattoos chapter on my leg, man. So
I know you can have some of mine.
I'll take them, bro.
Hey, how can
I'll trade you some weight? You give me some of your weight,
dude. And, you calling me, bro? Dad,
you're bulk. Okay, you're bulk.
How can people get a hold of you, bro?
Call Zeb.
Yeah.
No.
That's how you know you got a high level player on this show. He's like, don't call me. Call Zeb.
Are you active on Instagram? Can they follow you on Instagram?
I don't know. I think, yeah, we have an Instagram page under Taylor Gene Holmes. I would say just get a hold of me, on Facebook or Messenger, and, Jackson will probably reach out to you first. And cause I get hit up a lot, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I just can't deal with all that all the time. And so Jackson will probably reach out to you first and set something up, but I'm more than happy to sit down with people and I'm more than happy to take time. I just don't always necessarily have time right then.
Yeah.
So as long as you're patient, I'm patient and it's all good. If you got any deals, send them my way.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Casey. Yeah, we appreciate it, brother.
Thanks. Yeah, man.